broadcasting from the Kill Radio Newsroom in Los Angeles. Here is DJ Shy John with the weekly news from around the world.
Oh, and thank you, Brad, from our sister station up there in Modesto. Yes, this is Shy John, and today is Tuesday, February the 11th, 2014. Today, in the Harper's Weekly Review, also dated February 11th, at the opening ceremony of the 22nd Olympic Winter Games in Sochi, Russia, an 11-year-old recited the Cyrillic alphabet and guided an 18-segment presentation of Russian history that skipped the gulags and the Stalinist purges. A choir from the Ministry of Internal Affairs performed the Daft Punk song Get Lucky, and one of five lighted snowflakes that descended from the stadium roof failed to open up into an Olympic ring. Russian state TV aired taped footage of the five rings joining properly and of President Vladimir Putin seated next to a Persian leopard that later attacked two journalists at a Black Sea animal sanctuary. Foreign reporters complained of hotel rooms lacking doorknobs, locks, heat, working toilets, and floors. We have surveillance video from the hotels that shows people turn on the shower, direct the nozzle at the wall, and then leave the room for the whole day, said Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Kozak. My hotel has no water, tweeted a Chicago Tribune reporter. If restored, the front desk says, do not use on your face because it contains something very dangerous. Crew on a Pegasus Airlines flight to Turkey fooled a passenger who had threatened to detonate a non-existent bomb with his phone unless the aircraft was diverted to Sochi into believing that they landed there instead of Istanbul. Russian authorities detained 37 people protesting the occupation of the Caucasus, 23 gay rights activists, 2 environmental activists, and the leader of a group against arbitrary prosecutions, and blocked the delivery of Greek yogurt to American athletes. Human rights, said an activist in St. Petersburg, are generally violated in Russia. Workers in Sochi were euthanizing stray dogs and painting brown grass green. American officials blamed Russia for disseminating a leaked recording of a phone call between Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, in which Nuland said, F-word the EU. Pretty impressive trade craft, said Nuland of the bugging. Human Rights Watch released a report showing that Iraq was illegally holding and abusing thousands of female prisoners, and the Canadian electro-industrial band Skinny Puppy billed the U.S. government $666,000 for allegedly using their music to torture Guantanamo detainees, and Al-Qaeda officially cut ties with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. What? Al-Qaeda officially cut ties with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Nothing says hardcore, said an American scholar of militant Islam, like being cast out by Al-Qaeda. North of Baghdad, 22 ISIS members died during a suicide bombing training class when the instructor accidentally detonated a belt packed with explosives. The United States and Libya destroyed the final 2 tons of Muammar Gaddafi's 26.3-ton chemical weapons stockpile. The Syrian government missed a deadline to relinquish his stockpile of chemical weapons and continued to barrel bomb Aleppo, but agreed to a ceasefire, allowing hundreds of civilian residents of Homs to evacuate. aid trucks entering Homs turned back under fire from roadside bombs and mortar shells, for which government and anti-government forces blamed each other. In advance of international talks about its nuclear program, Iran agreed to discuss its plans to construct exploding bridge wire detonators, which are most often used in atomic weapons. And Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif highlighted the need for mutual trust between the negotiating parties. "Believe me, you do not possess the monopoly on mistrust. There is a lot of mistrust in Iran," said Zarif. "We should watch very carefully," said Israel's defense minister, addressing the conference after Zarif, "how this regime is going to manipulate, to deceive." The deaf Japanese composer Mamoru Samaraguchi was found to have had his compositions ghostwritten and was accused of not being deaf. In Milwaukee, a 300-year-old Stradivarius violin that had been stolen by burglars who shot its owner with a stun gun following a performance was recovered unharmed. In Washington, Utah, a cat named Quiver survived being shot through the head by an arrow. Vice President Joe Biden compared New York City's LaGuardia Airport to some third-world country, and the ruins of a prehistoric village were found in downtown Miami. Salvadorian fisherman Jose Salvador Alvarenga, who washed up on the Marshall Islands, 8,000 miles from the coast of Mexico, reportedly told officials he had left 13 months earlier on a shark fishing expedition than been cast adrift, surviving on fish, birds, and turtle blood. "The hardest thing I had to do to survive was to drink my own urine," said Alvarenga, whose teenaged colleague died of starvation 4 months into their journey and had to be thrown overboard. "He was not really thin compared to other survivors in the past," said Marshall Islands Foreign Affairs Secretary Guy Bing. "I may have some doubts." The Mexican walking fish, the axolotl, was feared extinct, and officials at Heathrow Airport in London seized 13 endangered San Salvador rock iguanas that had been stuffed into socks for transport from the Bahamas to Dusseldorf. The Copenhagen Zoo killed a healthy young giraffe named Marius to prevent him from inbreeding, then skinned him and fed him to lions in front of a group of schoolchildren. "I have given children a huge understanding of the anatomy of a giraffe," said zoo spokesman Tobias Stenbach-Bro. Moscow's park squirrel population was reportedly dwindling because poachers were selling them as pets. "We should gather people together and pelt the person who does that," said a Muscovite woman, "with snow." Ryan Liebenthal. That was in honor of the Beatles' 50-year anniversary of appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show yesterday, and in honor of Valentine's Day on Friday. Now, next up in the news, on Gawker, we find an article, "Decades of Greed, Behind the Scenes with an Angry Walmart Manager." It says, "We receive quite a few stories from Walmart employees about what life is like inside America's largest employer, but this one comes from a remarkable point of view, a longtime Walmart store manager who vents in detail about how Walmart has systematically screwed employees over two decades." And as an aside, I would point out that this has become the corporate standard, and that is why I harp so much about this topic. Like all of our emails from Walmart employees, this one is anonymous and represents one person's opinion. but the wealth of detail it contains about the company's management policies is remarkable. In particular, he discusses exactly how compensation and benefit policies have changed to the detriment of employees. We've boldened some of the parts we find most notable. Enjoy. I was recently on your site and was reading several of the stories from former and current Walmart associates. I would like to give you my experience. I write to you with a new email and will not give my real name. Retaliation is alive at Walmart. I've been with Walmart for over 20 years, beginning in the early 1990s. I've worked at more than 9 Walmarts and held various positions. I'm currently a salary assistant store manager and have been one for nearly a decade. For most of my career at Walmart, I enjoyed coming to work and, quite frankly, was the happiest before I became a manager. Once I took on the role as a manager, I was privy to meetings, emails, and behind-the-door discussions that a typical associate will never hear. I know that well-established companies must change as time progresses to remain competitive. However, I'm not opposed to change and welcome it. If anyone was to speak negatively about Walmart back in the 90s, I would be a defender of Walmart, and I was only a stocker in my early 20s back then. But Walmart was a much different company. It started shortly after Sam Walton's death in 1992. We just began the expansion of supercenters and no real international presence. In fact, in those days, we still had signs in our stores that read, "Buy American." We would have items flagged that were manufactured in America and brag about the jobs we created by buying American goods. We all know that isn't true now. Before I began to relay some knowledge you may not be aware of or heard, I would like to list, to the best of my abilities, some of the benefits Walmart has taken away from its associates in the last 20 years. Below are some benefits that new hires don't receive. Long-term associates keep these benefits, hence a reason to get rid of them. Sunday premium at time and a half. Sunday premium, an extra dollar an hour. This replaced the overtime pay for Sunday, but this dollar was also taken away. Profit sharing. Automatically put 6% of pay in profit sharing account. In 1997, Walmart changed the policy and put 2% in profit sharing and 2% in their new 401k. They effectively got rid of 2% and never bothered to inform associates of this loss. The typical associates had no clue how this would impact them in the long term. This is typical of Walmart executives, is to change benefits but spin it as a good thing. Eventually, Walmart, around 2010, did away with profit sharing altogether. They now have a 100% match for the first 6% contributed to the 401k. This is actually better. However, again, Walmart knows the typical employee cannot afford to contribute to the 401k plan. Even though this has helped my 401k balance greatly since I can afford it, I know it doesn't help the many people that work under me at $8 an hour. Full-time? Only had to work 20 hours. Full-time? Only had to work 28 hours. This replaced the 20-hour policy, but now any new hires have to work an average of 35 hours for full-time status. 90-day raises. You used to get a raise after 90 days. They took this one away recently, so now you must work 12 months to get a raise. Insurance cost. Maybe not fair to blame Walmart on this one, but in the early 90s, I was paying $9 per pay period biweekly for a $300 deductible. Now I pay $150 biweekly for a $3,500 deductible. Christmas bonus. I can't remember the amounts, but no more than $200. It doesn't exist for new hires, and salary managers don't qualify for it. Long-term and short-term disability. Can't remember exactly, but I know it used to pay around 80% of pay. Then it was cut to 60%, and now it only covers 50%. Oh, but the premium went up. so less coverage for more cost. Merit raises. Store manager used to be able to increase hourly pay, but now all pay is controlled by the home office. The Good Job Pin. This was another award program. If you got four of them, you could turn them in for one free share of Walmart stock. Basically, all award programs of monetary value has ended at store level, with the exception of a possible quarterly bonus up to $475, but I've never been in a store that got that kind of amount. Pay cap. Walmart used to keep giving you raises no matter your hourly rate. They now have caps based on position held. I have many associates who have not received a raise in nearly 9 years. I could keep going on, but basically Walmart has been hacking on its benefit and pay structure for years to save on cost. Their overall viewpoint is that there is little difference in performance and return on investment from a 10-year associate and a new hire. As I said before, Walmart was a good company to work for in relations to the retail sector. However, I feel horrible for the associates I have to manage and the struggles they face. I asked this question: how come in 1999 Walmart could pay me over $10 an hour, but in 2014 I hire people in at $8 an hour? I know Walmart will claim that the average associate makes $12.78 an hour. I have multiple degrees and one is in business. I don't need a degree in business to understand elementary statistics. The question that should be asked is what the median pay of Walmart associates is. The typical associate is under $9. I know this for a fact. Sure, if you add in all the ones who make $15 or $20 an hour, plus managers that make $50,000 to $100,000 a year, then you can get the $12.78 an hour average. Below is something you may not be aware of, and I will finish the email with this tidbit. Walmart used to require us at the stores to have a 60-40 ratio to full-time, part-time. Then I was told it had to be 40-40-20. Full-time, part-time, temporary. And to add insult, we expect all associates to have open availability. Also, temporary associates can work at the store for 6 months to a year and not ever be entitled to benefits. So if you have 100 associates, 40 full-time, 40 part-time, and 20 temporary, paying a lot less in benefits plus turnover is high. And I would point out that open availability prevents you from ever getting another job, so you're stuck there. Now, here is where a lot of greed and, in my opinion, immoral behavior begins. The company is being managed by the quarter. We have executives who have no vested interest in Walmart. All they care about is their salary and bonus. So when they make poor decisions, for example, this Christmas when they had a 1 hour guarantee for multiple items, this was a complete financial disaster. But yet the executive praise was of what a big success it was. You know what direction us managers were given to do in January? Remember, Walmart's fiscal year ends January 31st. You guessed it, cut hours. For the poor decisions made by executives at Walmart, who could care less where the company is in 20 or 20 years, we had to cut hours. Not only that, we had to cut all expenses. Home office put a hold on all our ordering of supplies, and try explaining to customers that you don't have toilet paper for the restrooms. We had to cut all our part-time associates from 32 hours to 25.5 hours. All our full-time associates had their hours cut too. In addition, we had to call all the people we had scheduled for orientation and tell them we couldn't hire them. Imagine you were told to start Walmart on Thursday, but get a call on Wednesday saying, "Nope, we can't hire you." Do you know how hard it is to go to someone that makes $8.85 an hour and tell them, "Sorry, but I have to cut you down to 25.5 hours. These people can barely pay their rent as it is, and with no notice, we cut their hours." The root problem besides greed is that Walmart's culture changed drastically with Sam Walton's death and the departure of David Glass as our CEO and Tom Coughlin. Lee Scott, CEO from 2000 to 2009, instituted a culture where you could not question the company's direction or offer critical feedback to the leadership. Years ago, on our company internet site, he had something I believe was called Ask Lee. It was basically a place you could ask him a question and he would respond. I remember a store manager asked Lee Scott why Walmart didn't offer its store associates a pension program so they could have the ability to retire. Lee Scott blasted this store manager for asking this question, and I was quite surprised that he even allowed this example to be posted. Nonetheless, Ask Lee was eliminated, and I wouldn't be surprised if so was the store manager. This mentality extends all the way down to the lowest level of the company. I could never send an honest feedback such as this email to anyone of authority at Walmart without being retaliated on. I've seen it many times. We even had a 50-year celebration last year, and each district was to send salary managers to an open forum discussion. Guess what the direction was? Select managers that are positive, and it was understood you were not to complain about anything. Your market manager and store manager were present for these meetings. And of course on Gawker, there are plenty of comments below. Now I could add one more thing here. I have an article from Yahoo Finance, Tuesday, February 11th, 2014, The New Face of Food Stamps, Working Age Americans. As U.S. wages stagnate, food stamp use growing fastest among workers with some college training. By Hope Yen, and this is from the Associated Press, January 27th. Washington, AP, in a first, working age people now make up the majority in U.S. households that rely on food stamps, a switch from a few years ago when children and the elderly were the main recipients. Some of the change is due to demographics, such as the trend toward having fewer children, but a slow economic recovery with high unemployment, stagnant wages, and an increasing gulf between low-wage and high-skilled jobs also plays a big role. It suggests that government spending on the $80 billion a year food stamp program, twice what it cost 5 years ago, may not subside significantly anytime soon. Well, I don't know about that if they keep cutting back on it, huh? Food to kids. Food stamp participation since 1980 has grown the fastest among workers with some college training, a sign that the safety net has stretched further to cover America's former middle class. Former middle class, according to an analysis of government data for the Associated Press by economists at the University of Kentucky. Formerly called Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, or SNAP, the program now covers 1 in 7 Americans. The findings coincide with the latest economic data showing workers' wages and salaries growing at the lowest rate relative to corporate profits in U.S. history. And that is my point. President Barack Obama's State of the Union address Tuesday night was expected to focus in part on reducing income inequality, such as by raising the federal minimum wage, which will never reach survival. Congress, meanwhile, is debating cuts to food stamps, with Republicans, including House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, a Republican Virginia, wanting a $4 billion a year reduction to an anti-poverty program that they say promotes dependency and abuse. I don't think so. Economists say having a job may no longer be enough for self-sufficiency in today's economy. Well, yeah, not on what they pay, huh? A low-wage job supplemented with food stamps is becoming more common for the working poor, said Timothy Smeeding, an economics professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who specializes in income inequality. Many of the U.S. jobs now being created are low or minimum wage, part-time or in areas such as retail or fast food, which means food stamps use will stay high for some time, even after unemployment improves. Well, that's in quotes, I think, unemployment improves. The newer food stamp recipients include Maggie Barcelano, 25, of Austin, Texas, a high school graduate. She enrolled in college but couldn't complete her nursing degree after she could no longer afford the tuition. Hoping to boost her credentials, she went through emergency medical technician training with the Army National Guard last year but was unable to find work as a paramedic because of the additional certification and fees required. Barcelano, now the mother of a 3-year-old daughter, finally took a job as a health home aide. She's working 6 days a week at $10 an hour. Well, that's pretty good. Struggling with a low income, she recently applied for food stamps with the help of the nonprofit Any Baby Can to help save up for the paramedic training while she has a kid. "It's devastating," Barcelano said. "When I left for the Army, I was so motivated, thinking I was creating a situation where I could give my daughter what I know she deserves. But when I came back and basically found myself in the same situation, it was like it was all for naught." Since 2009, more than 50% of U.S. households receiving food stamps have been adults ages 18 to 59, according to the Census Bureau's current population survey. The food stamp program defines non-elderly adults as anyone younger than 60. Gee, thanks. As recently as 1998, the working age share of food stamp households was at a low of 44%, before the dot-com bust and subsequent recessions of 2001 and 2007 pushed new enrollees into the program, according to the analysis by James Zillak, director of the Center for Poverty Research at the University of Kentucky. By education, about 28% of food stamp households are headed by a person with at least some college training, up from 8% in 1980. Among those with 4-year college degrees, the share rose from 3 to 7%. High school graduates had the bulk of food stamp households at 37%, up from 28%. In contrast, food stamp households headed by a high school dropout have dropped by more than half to only 28%. The shifts in food stamp participation come amid broader changes to the economy, such as automation, globalization, and outsourcing, which have polarized the job market. Many good-paying jobs in areas such as manufacturing have disappeared, shrinking the American middle class and bumping people with higher levels of education into lower-wage work, like the way they treat you at Walmart and retail in general and fast food, like, right? An analysis Zillak conducted for the AP finds that stagnant wages and income inequality play an increasing role in the growth of food stamp rolls. Well, I would think so, huh? Taking into account changing family structure, higher unemployment, and policy expansions to the food stamp program, the analysis shows that stagnant wages and income inequality explain just 3.5% of the change in food stamp enrollment from 1980 to 2011. But from 2000 to 2011, wages and inequality accounted for 13% of the increase. Several economists say food stamp rolls are likely to remain elevated for some time. Historically, there has been a lag before an improving unemployment rate leads to a substantial decline in food stamp rolls. The Congressional Budget Office has projected it could take 10 years. We do not expect income inequality stabilizing or declining in the absence of real wage growth or a significant reduction in unemployment and underemployment problems, said Ishwar Katiwanda, an economist for the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University, who reviewed the Labor and Commerce Department's wage data. Full and part-time workers employed year-round saw the fastest growth in food stamp participation since 1980, making up 17% and 7% of households, respectively. In contrast, the share of food stamp households headed by an unemployed person has remained largely unchanged at 53%. part-year workers declined in food stamp share. Associated Press writer Jackie Claire Jelonek contributed to this report. Well, that's plenty of news today, folks. I hope we can come up with some more good news this year, eh? But in the meantime, be good to each other, and you guys all stay out of the news.